This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It was earlier this summer that a gunman entered a newsroom in Maryland and opened fire. Five people were killed at the Annapolis Capital Gazette.
Several shots have been fired, possible shotgun, at least 10 shots heard.
Do we have any kind of intel on our shooter? Bite my elbow with a ponytail.
Police then trying to get people out. Adults could be seen coming out with their hands in the air, getting searched by the police.
The police came through, knocking on our door, grabbing the door. So, you know, he's like, you need to get out, you need to get out. So then we all ran out into the hallway.
We're doing everything we can to get people out safe, and we're trying to minimize the casualties.
While inside, a police reporter at the newspaper, Phil Davis, tweeting his description of the horror unfolding. He said it was like a war zone, tweeting, a single shooter shot multiple people at my office, some of whom are dead. Then he tweets, gunman shot through the glass door to the office and opened fire on multiple employees. Can't say much more and don't want to declare anyone dead, but it's bad. And perhaps his most chilling tweet came next. There's nothing more terrifying than hearing multiple people get shot while you're under your desk and then hear the gunman reload.
That gunman had a long-standing grievance with the Gazette. He had a well-documented history of harassing reporters there. And that's chilling because every newsroom has a guy like that, someone who routinely calls up and threatens reporters and sends profanity-larded emails and tweets to reporters there. This adds significantly to the emotional trauma that reporters are already dealing with as we firsthand are witnesses to the horrible stuff that happens all over our world. And all this while the president calls journalists the enemy of the people. Where is all this going? What does it mean? We're talking about journalism today and trauma. We're invited to call in. If you've got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined by Bruce Shapiro. He's the executive director of the DART Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia Journalism School. Dr. Frank Ochberg is the traumatic psychiatrist at Michigan State University, and Nicole Schillett is a journalist assistance program coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Glad to be here.
So, Bruce Shapiro, is it tougher now as journalists dealing, we know, with the trauma that we already have to witness? Are things getting worse?
Well, I think there are a few things that are new and important challenges. And, you know, but let's start with where you began. Part of our job as reporters, and I count myself in that tribe, is to bring the news of challenging, difficult, violent, tragic events to the public. These are big disruptions in the social fabric, murders, disasters, war, refugees, so many of the most crucial issues facing democratic society involve the worst things that happen to people. So it's always been tough. And as long as there has been journalism, there have been people who hate journalists, who hate individual reporters or hate the press. Nixon hated the press. In the early years of the Republic, the Federalists locked up a bunch of anti-Federalist editors. So there have been issues before, but a few things are different now. One thing that has made the job of reporters that much tougher is the pipeline of toxic threats and harassment coming through social media and online portals, both online comments and Facebook and Twitter and all the rest, which have, you know, journalists are logical targets for trolls of all kinds, and it's, you know, it's beginning to have an impact. A lot of news organizations also are now dealing with the very graphic and violent imagery that comes across social media feeds, user-generated content. That's making life more difficult. But then, of course, you have the, you know, the T factor, the Trump factor. You have the idea that threats to journalists, always on the radar, are being stoked and fed and encouraged by the President of the United States, and we should say, by authoritarian leaders in a number of other countries, like President Duterte in the Philippines, Vladimir Putin in Russia. Attacks on journalists, which are primarily verbal in this country, occasionally all too real, as they were in Annapolis. Attacks on journalists in other countries are a routine daily matter. So that is making the landscape more difficult. You could say, you know, when we talk about this presidency, people sort of await a constitutional crisis. My own view is that the constitutional crisis actually began on the day in August 2016 when then-candidate Trump had a reporter, Jorge Ramos from Univision,
right,
forcibly ejected from his press conference. From that moment, it was open season on journalists. And, you know, we've had a number of high-level reporters in the last week come forward with explicit accounts or recordings of the threats that they are receiving. In one case, even on air, a caller into C-SPAN said to one of CNN's correspondents, if I see you, I'm going to shoot you. I mean, you know, this is a new climate of threat in the United States.
And Dr. Frank Ochberg, you're a psychiatrist. How do we deal with that? I mean, is this taking a toll on reporters?
Well, the part of the problem that I've been dealing with for 20 years is helping journalists recognize that they are first responders, that they are going to have heartache when they cover stories of children who were killed. They're just as prone to being traumatized as combat veterans are when they cover wars. And thank goodness for my colleagues, Bruce and Nicole, who represent the largest and I think the most effective organizations that are helping the journalist protect himself and herself and create a culture in which they care about one another. I've been a consultant to police, to military. I'm a medical doctor, but also a specialist in post-traumatic stress disorder. And journalists have been very late to recognize the wounds that they carry. I'm glad that we're looking at the issue of having a president who is a journalist basher, and we do want to find ways of restraining that activity on the part of the occupant of the White House and rallying around the journalist who we need. We need people to tell us what we don't want to look at. If we don't have that, we are very vulnerable. And the journalists that I deal with are marvelous people. They are humane. And I have, because there are very few psychiatrists who specialize in this, I have a practice in which journalists are my patients. And we might want to go down that road later. But
we will. We definitely will. We'll be talking about some of the issues that journalists face, including self-medicating, you know, drink too much, smoke too much, quick to anger, just dealing with all the things of PTSD, and why that is and how that could impact their reporting as well. But we're going to take a quick break, and our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Journalism, trauma, and Trump on The Source. We'll be right back. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about journalism today being under attack by President Trump, also being under attack by many of the people who follow him at these rallies. Reporters who cover the event are being shouted at and physically. Sometimes they've had their computers slammed shut. They deal with people shoving them. Nicole Schillett, you're with the Committee to Protect Journalists. Are you advising journalists to do anything different today than in previous years?
I mean, CPJ has always promoted a holistic approach to safety and security. And I think that for a long time, journalists kind of thought that was only needed if they were going to a conflict zone or traveling abroad. And I think it's becoming more evident to journalists that it really is relevant to you whether you're covering a protest in the U.S. or, you know, even a political event. So And we really believe that journalists should take precautions and introduce physical, digital, and psychosocial components into their safety regimen before doing any assignment. And I think that's becoming especially evident right now.
Let me go to the callers. Chris is on the line. Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. You know, I just have a quick comment. I don't really have a question. And one thing that's really concerning to me, yesterday I was listening to the Robert Mueller and specifically the trial against Paul Manafort with the things. And one of the things that they talked about was the timeline. And I believe, I could be wrong, but it was like on July 26th of 16, you know, he called for Russia to, you know, to attack or to hack Hillary Clinton. And on the 27th was their first attempt. And I don't know if he understands the implications of his words, you know, when he does say things like all news are fake news except for, say, Alex Jones or Fox News or one of these, or the press is the enemy of the people. And you know, at some point, whenever they're dealing with a lawsuit, and especially when they're dealing with, like, a fraud or some sort of an attack, intent is the key.
Right.
And I think that with some of these things, by saying that, you know, the press is the enemy of the people, is there intent to cause harm? And if so, is there any implications towards the president for that?
Chris, thank you for the call. Let's go to Bruce Shapiro with the DART Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia Journalism School. Can you kind of talk about the Trump effect over on journalism?
Well, you know, I think it's easy to exaggerate the Trump effect. I think the majority of reporters are simply doing their jobs. Whether they are being made fun of, yelled at, or whatever. That said, I think a few things have changed. We see the impact somewhat at the national level, where you have, again, reporters like Brett Stelter at CNN, others who have been threatened and have begun to go public with threats against them, which never used to be the case. I think there's a sense on journalists' parts that we need to let the public know what it's really like. I'll tell you where I actually see it more. I see it more at the local level. I think the Trump effect, the troll effect, I prefer to think of it, because this is something that began before Trump, which Trump has focused and, in an American sense, sort of perfected. But the troll effect has been to further demoralize and isolate local reporters, very hardworking local reporters who are part of their own community, who are covering difficult, sometimes divisive events like murder trials, and who come to work to find a stream of toxic invective on the comments section of their publication or in their social media feed. And they're obligated to pay attention to it because they get evaluated on their jobs based on media, on social media engagement. This has been very difficult. I also think that we're seeing this effect, the troll effect, collide with the destruction, the large-scale destruction of local and regional news in the U.S. as local newspapers and news sites have shrunk down. As ownership has consolidated and papers have gone out of business and all that, there are a number of very innovative nonprofit local news sites that are trying to solve the problem. But the reality is, in a community like mine, I live in a city of 120,000 people, you go to the website of the big daily newspaper, you can't really even find out what's happening in your own community anymore. So as news consumers, all we are seeing is the invective. I think that's very corrosive. The combination of the rise of trolling on the one hand and the destruction of genuine local news on the other has separated a big part of the American population from any identification with reporting that they may have had.
So, Dr. Frank Ochberg, you're a psychiatrist. I was covered the Sutherland Springs shootings down here nearby. 26 people were killed in the church. And I was there for several days covering that. And then I'm back in my office and I'm doing the show, The Source. And then I get a phone call from somebody screaming at me that I am a threat to his race and that he's going to kill me. On my phone. And so I'm like going, normally I wouldn't think twice about it. It's just another guy. But because I had just gone through that shooting experience and seen the damage that one person can do, it really, really shook me up. So, I mean, it seems like these are compounding events, that they don't exist in isolation. Go ahead.
Yes, they are. The post-traumatic stress disorder works in a special way. It frightens you to the point that your brain changes its mode of functioning to prepare you for a fight for the death. And at the same time that that's going on, the rest of your brain, the intelligent part, is taking in what's happening and absorbing sometimes the absurdity, sometimes the sadness, sometimes just the injury to that which is right. We're calling that a moral injury. And if you came out of it, by the way, do you like to be called Martin or David?
Dave's fine.
Dave, and I'm Frank Dave. I'd rather okay. be on a first name basis with the audience. Dave, I end up dealing with the journalist who is sensitive enough to know that she or he hasn't recovered. And we only call it post-traumatic stress when you don't recover for a month. Now, in your case, with what you went through, you may have been very deeply touched and moved, and it's not bad for you. You are my eyes and ears. You stand there for the rest of us who don't go into harm's way. And you're supposed to have a strong reaction. But then you also have a gift for interpreting it, for conveying it, and for helping us identify with those who suffer. I'd like to see your audience identify with all the journalists who are doing the job. You know, we can't live without journalism. We take journalists for granted. We have a president who is a bully and a narcissist, and he believes that he can rally the worst elements of a base to hate journalism, to disrespect the First Amendment. He's very big on the Second Amendment. Where is he on the First Amendment? So I'd like to see us get passionate about confronting Trumpism and supporting journalism.
Nicole Shillett, so with the Committee to Protect Journalists, and you look globally, certainly in Mexico, not far from where we are right here in San Antonio, they are dealing with out-and-out attacks on journalists being murdered, I think more than any other place, certainly in North America. But, so it's bad there.
Yeah, Mexico is one of the most dangerous places for journalists today outside of the conflict zone. And I think that's what's so frightening is, as Bruce has mentioned, that when leaders are using tactics such as Trump is to label outlets as fake news in any response to criticism, they're denigrating the role of the press and not only emboldening officials in public inside the U.S., but also emboldening autocratic leaders outside the U.S., who we are already seeing consolidating power by marginalizing the independent media. And I think that this has been a huge wake-up call to journalists in the U.S. who have been kind of immune from that for a long time.
Okay, let me go to the caller. This is Will. And Will, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. You know, sometimes we just don't get both sides of the story. I listen to NPR every day. I've been a caller on your show quite a few times. I think the biggest problem we have is journalists are no longer the professionals that they were back in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. I grew up looking at journalists as what protects us from the government. But this last election we had, the journalists pick sides. And that doesn't help America at all. Jim Acosta, I listened to his White House briefings he goes into. He doesn't ask important questions about what's going on today. He makes it personal with the president. He makes it personal with Sarah Sanders. And we need the journalists to quit making it personal.
All right, Will, and we're going to answer that. Also, I think John, this caller, has similar comments. And so, John, I'm going to give you a chance to follow up on Will. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
journalists are not doing their job. They report, you report episodically when there's a symptom of a problem, but you don't you don't mention the underlying cause of the problem. Look in the economics textbook, they say externalities, the side effects of the economic activity that are not counted on the balance sheet because there's no fee to put pollution. So there's a pollution disaster, externalities are not mentioned. When there's an economic disparity story or poverty is reported, social unrest due to disparity of wealth, there's no mention of a fee being charged.
So, John, you've lost me. Put a fine point on it. What are you trying to say?
Report the underlying solution or the systemic problems. We don't share natural wealth equally. We don't respect public property rights.
All right, John, thank you for that. So let me go over to Bruce Shapiro, Executive Director of DART, to respond to the feedback that we've got from our callers.
Sure. Well, I'd say to both Will and John, first of all, thank you for continuing to engage and think about reporting and what its job is. That's important. Look, I think it's time for people to stop talking about the media, capital T, capital M, or journalists with a capital J, and instead recognize that there's all kinds of reporters. There's good and bad reporters, in-depth reporters, and fast, agile breaking news reporters, investigative reporters, sports reporters, local reporters, national reporters, and understand that there are a lot of different ways of doing this, and our First Amendment, our beloved First Amendment to the Constitution, contemplated a rich, raucous media landscape in which arguments happen. I would say, Will, to you, that I actually, as someone who teaches in a journalism school, I find that the young people going into reporting now are actually more skilled and more prepared to be keeping their balance, asking the right questions, finding stories where other people aren't looking. The skills of young reporters going to the business now are really awesome. I do think that the current situation poses a challenge to journalists who are independent-minded, who want to be critical of whoever holds power, and asking questions of whoever holds power. And that's, look, that's a tough job.
We're going to take a break here. And we'll come back, and phone lines will be open, 210-614-8980. We're talking about journalism and trauma and what's happening in today here in the world as journalists adopt this role in the target zone. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about journalism in this day and age. Journalists are facing trauma. Journalism are also facing a lot of pushback in many different ways. Let's bring in a journalist that we know, Alexi Wood. He's a freelance journalist, a photojournalist. He was covering the Trump inauguration on January 20th, 2017. And he was arrested for covering that event, and he was facing 70 years in prison for doing his job. Alexi Wood, are you there?
Yes, hi. It's Alexei. Thank you. Yes, I'm here.
And so, Alexei, so you were arrested. You were shooting photographs of protesters during the Trump inauguration, correct?
Protesters, police, spectators. I mean, it was certainly the full gamut of the experience I tried to take a photo of, sure.
And why were you arrested?
That's a good question. It was a anti-capitalist, anti-fascist march and protest, and the police were not happy about that at all. And so they came incredibly aggressive in riot gear, ready to just maul on people. And so what they eventually did is they herded people into one street, and that was blocked off on that end. And then as they pushed everybody into the street, they blocked that one off. And so they, what's called kettling, And then they just squeezed everybody that was on that street into one spot. And then mass arrested everybody. And then, you know, kept pursuing 8 felonies on every single person that was anywhere close. So that's how I got arrested.
And there were credentialed media there? You were credentialed?
Yes and no. I'm fully independent, so I have a DIY press pass, and I'm proud of that, and I'm fine with that. I do have my associations, whatnot, although I'm fully independent from everybody.
Mm-hmm. But there were other reporters, like from Al Jazeera, who were also arrested.
Exactly, and I don't want to. There is no accreditation.
Yeah, I object to that.
In a nebulous world. I just don't want to uphold that there is some sort of official definition or official organization that stamps out something, and then all of a sudden it's this magical privilege. It is a privilege for sure, but it's super nebulous and it's up for grabs.
Great. Any press pass that can be minted can be one that is taken away. So, and that's not something that we should be allowing.
It's a privilege given, not taken.
But you were there doing a job. You were arrested. You were facing number of felonies. They were accusing you and other journalists as inciting the activities.
Right. Right. Thank you. Well, let me just tell you some context of where I'm at right now. I am at an ICE facility in San Antonio, Texas, that has an occupation that today is the third week of the occupation, and they have just been given orders by the San Antonio Police Department to vacate. And so here I am, not only involved in, gladly involved in the occupation for these 3 weeks, I'm also have the capabilities of being a conduit of information and be a journalist and be that role ethically and sound and still be completely involved. And I'm proud of it. And so our camp is getting, it's 1:30 right now is the deadline that SAPD has been given. So the reason why I'm given the context of where I'm at is like, I am scared, you know, like pending arrest for speaking out against colonization, speaking out against the prison industrial complex, you know, like everything's been so peaceful here.
So let me ask you a question, Alexa, let me ask you, how many nights did you spend in jail when you were arrested?
Okay, I was 36 hours in the D.C. Prison system.
And how bad did that suck?
You know, I do a lot of like subspace therapy, like BDSM stuff, and so I was able to kind of check out and you know, like know my own boundaries and not be affected by oppression that I can't control. I just kind of waited that out.
All right. So, but the police, DC police, still have your gear. Is that correct?
Right. Right. So the police still have my gear. And so it's utterly, and then PTSD, like I know that's the theme of the subject, and I appreciate that. Unfortunately, I'm re-traumatized as we speak.
You're in the middle of a scene there. I'll let you do your job. Thanks for giving us an update on what happened with you covering the Trump inauguration. Let's go over to Dr. Frank Ochberg. He's a trauma psychiatrist. He works with journalists all the time. He's with Michigan State University and the former associate director of the National Institute on Mental Health. You could hear the panic. You could hear the stress in Alexia's voice, right?
You really could. And I was thinking a lot of my colleague, Nicole, because she represents the organization that deals with these issues, that confronts those who arrest, who take illegal actions against journalists. And it's very good that we have that international advocacy represented here. But I was pleased to see that this young man knows he's doing an important job. He's willing to take some suffering. What I'm all about now is trying to raise the resources so that journalists can have access to one another at times like this. Police and military are better at supporting one another. Bruce Shapiro is the leading person in the world now in helping journalists
right.
learn how to find one another and respect one another.
So let me turn to Nicole Shellett with the Committee to Protect Journalists. Do we see reporters being arrested, arrest, and are charges dropped on reporters? Is that something that's happening more routinely here in the United States?
It is, and the criminalization of journalists covering protests is certainly concerning. In August 2017, CPJ launched with partner organizations a U.S. Press Freedom Tracker to kind of collect this data and that people can send in incidences. And the data shows that protests were the most dangerous beat in the U.S., accounting for 29 arrests. And that includes 12 equipment searches or seizures and 31 assaults of journalists. And that's just in 2017, which is a huge increase from before.
And Bruce Shapiro, what are you telling journalists to, everyone be ready to spend a night in jail when you go do your job?
Well, I think there are a few different levels of preparation that I'm encouraging in young reporters and all reporters, really. One is simply to think more strategically about safety than domestic reporters sometimes used to. Certainly when I used to cover demonstrations and fires and other kinds of events, we never really thought too much about this stuff. And I think it's important now. It's important to be secure in your devices. It's important and strategic about knowing how to get out of a difficult situation, and important to recognize when you are being threatened. I'm encouraging news organizations and individual reporters to take threats much more seriously than they used to, both because of the kind of accelerant power of social media and because the current political environment does have an effect on unhinged, dangerous individuals. I think we'll be seeing more attacks. And then finally, really, really encouraging journalists to take care of themselves psychologically, to be aware that as a group, as a tribe, we are pretty resilient when we do our jobs well.
Yeah, and it helps to be able to turn to other reporters doing that.
Exactly.
So let me get someone on the phone. This is Sylvia Foster Frau, and she is with Journalists Covering Trauma, and she has started that group. Sylvia, welcome to The Source.
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me. I just wanted to add to the conversation that, you know, as journalists are increasingly under attack, and, you know, especially from my perspective, I'm an Express News reporter, and I was covering the mass shooting in Sutherland Springs, like many of y'all were. You know, we also experienced a secondhand trauma, and with newsrooms dwindling resources, I think a lot of journalists have been kind of taking it upon themselves to, in their own way, form support networks. So me and a reporter from the Orlando Sentinel, which, you know, covered the Pulse shooting, actually banded together and started our own kind of professional and personal support group called Journalists Covering Trauma. It's a Facebook page now, but it's basically just like a space for that, for helping journalists know how to cope with trauma, and also like what are some of the practical tools we can use and implement in our newsroom for future events.
And there are a lot of red flags you got to watch out for when reporters don't do a good job of handling this stuff, right?
Yeah, and so I think a lot of what we try to do is just share resources and help each other know what to look out for, maybe try to implement a little bit more of a system in our newsrooms for checking in on people when they are experiencing trauma or secondhand trauma in some form.
Right, and sometimes people, it impacts your reporting. I mean, it shades you. It makes you more cynical, and that doesn't help.
Yeah, I think it does impact. And so if you really believe that it's important for journalists to cover people's stories and to do their job well, you know, we also have to be of sound mind. And so with that comes, you know, a host of other, advice, I guess, that we can give one another.
Absolutely. Sylvia, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. And she's an immigration reporter for the San Antonio Express News, started the group, Journalists Covering Trauma. Our phone lines are open. We've got some callers on the board. We'll get you on the air when we come back. The number is 210-614-8980. As we talk about journalism and trauma and the accusation of fake news, this is The Source. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, and let's go to the phone lines as we talk more about journalism and trauma, 210-614-8980. And Antonio, welcome to The Source. Antonio, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me well?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm Dr. Antonio Ramirez. I'm a psychotherapist, and what I'm observing is a lot of cognitive dissonance in some of my clients, when they're told that what they're hearing and seeing is not true, and it comes from someone in power, very concretely on the president, and also see many of the symptoms of abuse, be it psychological abuse, that cognitive dissonance, what you're seeing is not true, and also verbal abuse, when you're listening to your culture, your person, minority, gay, so many people being verbally abused, and then doubting and wondering if there's something wrong.
Right. So you are kind of breaking up there, Antonio. Let's go over to Dr. Frank Ochberg for more on that. If you could, can you add to what Antonio was talking about?
I see it too. There are people who are being abused by the President of the United States because of their gender or their race or their political opinion, and it is abusive. And I think we have to collectively say, stop bullying us. You have become a source of moral and psychological injury to vulnerable people. A lot of us are outraged. We can handle it. But I'll tell you, psychiatrists and psychologists who talk to one another find that their patients are doing worse. And many, many people become patients because they've had parents who are abusive or narcissistic or even psychopathic. And these traits just do not belong in the leadership of America.
Okay, let's go to Diane. Diane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank Hi. You. Although I'm just a citizen, I'm not on the front lines, nor is my husband. I want you all to know, you reporters that are listening, you have our support. You have our support when we leave our home and we talk about factual news and we try to sway anybody that may think that the reporters are the enemy of the state. I can't believe the leader of our nation says this, and it really hurts my heart and it scares me. But we know the facts. We listen to the words that come out of his mouth. And we know that you all are doing your job. And just keep on, hang in there, know we're with you, and God bless you.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate your support. I know there are a lot of people out there that feel that way. But Nicole Shillett, when you hear the the reporters deal with the people who aren't happy with their coverage, Nicole Shillett. So can you respond to that about how when we got to report, you got to protect journalists from the people who are angry and the people who feel like they have a stake in trying to silence reporters? Is that how it works?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it can be pretty hostile out there. And, you know, echoing what Bruce said, I think a lot of how to confront that and address it is just to be prepared. And that requires safety training, which includes psychosocial components. I think especially with the digital media and threats we're seeing with trolling and doxing, which can take a huge toll and really is anybody can do it and target you, there are certain precautions you can take and resources out there that I hope journalists, especially freelancers who often lack the backing and support of a larger outlet, will take advantage of with just tips. how to kind of better prepare and protect themselves.
Bruce Shapiro, we heard earlier from a caller, and he said back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, journalism were just reporting the news. They didn't have opinion. But, you know, I read a lot of old newspapers for another project I'm working on. I read the newspapers from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And really, those newspapers were doing an inadequate job. They didn't cover...
Oh yeah. I mean, first of all, it's a myth. The idea that there was a golden age of reporting in America, and it's been downhill since then. As a journalism historian myself, I can tell you that this is nonsense. There were always reporters who would make stuff up. There were always reporters who were partisan. There also were always reporters who were exemplars of truth-telling.
But back then they had reporters that were mainly working for the Chamber of Commerce. They weren't really interested in covering the diversity of our communities and also writing about the economic struggle.
Well, and you also, in many cases, had local or even national newspapers in which advertisers were interfering all the time in the publication of critical news. So the idea that there was this. And this isn't to mythologize our current crop of reporters, but the idea that there was a golden age is nonsense. And what's more, things like investigative reporting, documentary, photography, we are in a golden age now of some kinds of in-depth work. I wanted to say thank you to Diane, a couple of callers ago. Yeah. We need listeners, we need readers and news consumers to be speaking up on behalf of journalism now. As a profession, we do sometimes find it hard to speak up for ourselves. We believe we're supposed to be independent, covering social movements, not generating protests ourselves. Even in Mexico, it's been very difficult when journalists are under attack for reporters to organize in their own defense. We need citizens who value independent reporting at the local level, at the national level, to speak up in praise of our role or in the praise of individual stories and reporters. That's so important. At the same time, going back to what Sylvia said, I think as reporters we need to understand, one of the great lessons I've learned from mental health professionals like Frank Ochberg is that if we are isolated and not connecting ourselves to one another and to our other sources of support, that isolation is the biggest risk factor for psychological injury and the biggest predictive factor for resilience and people being able to do their job well is staying connected to one another in community and in particular in communities of journalists. When we follow our ethical code, when we practice our craft as well as we can, regardless of the rhetorical or literal rocks being thrown at us, that's a source of strength and resilience and the ability to go on. So I think we kind of are at a time where we need both things. We need, on the one hand, what I think is the majority of the public that values the role of journalists to come to the defense of this profession and this craft, which is at the very foundation of American democracy. And we also, as a tribe of journalists, need to speak up for ourselves. As one of the great Talmudic sages, Rabbi Hillel, says, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? Right? We need to be speaking up for ourselves, too. So it's that kind of a challenging moment.
Let's go back to the phones with Oscar. Oscar, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. As a public school teacher in the San Antonio area, I just wanted to say how important it is. I find that educators such as myself talk to kids about ciphering, you know, sifting through data and information, you know, from the media, from their friends, and judging it for themselves, being critical thinkers, and really judging for themselves whether or not this information is valid, looking at sources, not putting it on other people to say this is fake news or this is not, because a lot of times what I'm seeing is a lot of gaslighting, as another person had put it, you know, abusive type behavior where misinformation is put out and sold off as the truth. So I just wanted to say that I think it's important for adults, teachers, people who have access to the future, you know, put that understanding in kids' minds about how to think for themselves.
All right, but it's very difficult to figure out what is the truth, and it seems to be there is no absolute truth. Dr. Frank Ochberg, how do we put that in context?
Well, we just had a teacher who is opening up people's minds. No, there's no absolute truth, but there are educated ways of learning facts and learning opinions and balancing opinions. I think we have to invest a lot in real education. And when we have powerful people who are quite skilled at obscuring truth, those of us who know what truth is have to speak out. And you're giving us an opportunity to do it right here. And I think the general tone is we understand the importance of real news.
Right, but when you're a reporter, you just want to report. Now you're suddenly a warrior for truth. Nicole Shillett, how are reporters functioning with that?
I think you do the best you can. You know, you fight misinformation, but at the same time, you do what you need to ensure the free flow of information. So you can't censor it, because then who's deciding?
Right.
And, you know, you have to decipher what you trust.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us this afternoon as we talked about journalism and trauma in the age of Trump. Bruce Shapiro, Executive Director of the DART Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia School of Journalism. Dr. Frank Ochberg, a trauma psychiatrist at the Michigan State University. Nicole Shillett, a Journalism Assistance Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.